Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Did you bring wine?
I got the glasses.
You guys, I made a quiz.
No, I didn't bring anything, but I'm here to have fun.
Hello, and welcome to the official Broad Wasted podcast, where we're drunk on theater. I'm your host, Brian Plofsky, and after all these years, marry me. Not Mrs. A, but the chief cook and bottle washer. Don't ama me at the social center. All the girls in a row say that there's not enough magic, but with this blue crystal and colored light, we can make it. Joining us today are the usual apples that don't fall very far from the tree in the rink, including Kevin Wallflower Jager.
I was so not there until that last moment. I'm so ashamed of myself.
You mean when I said the rink?
The rink.
The rink.
And gave you the answer?
Yep.
Kimberly. Well, I think Kimberly song is the one from the show. I think. I don't know. I've never seen it. Kimberly, our What Happened to the Old Days game master and unofficial babysitter for the hour.
Sure.
And with us is someone who you may have seen in A Bronx Tale, The Lion King, Beautiful, or The Girl from North Country. Let's give a big Broadway welcome to friend of the show.
Friend of the show.
Kimber Sprung. Welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Of course. We're so pleased to have you here. But before we start with anything, what are you drinking?
I'm having a little red wine. I think this is just I want to say it's a Sangiovese, you know, a little Italian. That's my favorite.
Awesome. Are you primarily a red wine drinker?
It's seasonal. It's fall now, so I'm into my reds. But of course, in the summer, I'll have my Chardonnay. I'll drink whatever I'm feeling, you know.
Totally. Your answer of it's seasonal is my favorite thing because that's 100% true. Because I'll go next on that note. I'm drinking Oktoberfest beer, a Sam Adams Oktoberfest. Again, seasonal. I understand that it is not October, so. I think I'll be okay, though.
Yeah, you're close.
All right, thank you.
October is also a feeling. It's
yes.
Halloween, and you know, it's apple picking. That's a great one.
100%.
Wait, no, I love your line. I love your line. October is a feeling. I'm gonna steal that.
Isn't it
We've only been recording for like 2 minutes, and everything you've said is quotable.
Kevin, are you gonna give us a nice quote? What are you drinking?
Okay, so I just got creative because I just looked what's in my house. And so I am drinking mezcal and orange juice.
Okay.
I'm not mad at it. I'm really not. Like, I thought it was going to be, like, not a good combo, but, like, it's smooth and a little spicy.
I love that. Kimberly, all right. did you concoct something or a little bit more straightforward?
I'm also quite seasonal. And with the seasons changing, my throat's a little scratchy. So I have some hot rooibos tea with whiskey in a Lion King mug.
Ooh, that's a nice Lion King mug.
Thank you. It says the Lion King on the other side. Oh, where's this camera?
There it is. Oh, that's nice.
But I prefer just the lion head. You know, not as obvious that it's the Lion King.
Totally. I mean, yeah.
I think it's pretty obvious.
Yeah, I know. Doesn't quite spell it out the same way as the title. Like,
yeah. Oh, literally, you mean?
Yeah, but I like that he looks at everyone while I drink.
Sure. Because he lives in you.
Yeah. Wait, this is a great question. Which lion do we think this is? Is this Mufasa or Simba?
That's Mufasa.
Yeah,
that would be my guess.
He's giving me the Mufasa, like stern, wise, you know, smug.
Yeah,
I mean, it's just, that's definitely Mufasa.
Or I think it's Scar, and it's really weird merchandising.
it's
a show about the demise of the Lion King Scar. Yeah.
It's a pre-Scar.
Yeah. Oh, what would they
wait, can you do like Wicked but Scar? So like a young Scar before he's evil. In college.
One short day roaming out of the Pride Lands. Like, I'm obsessed with this.
It's definitely before he got a perm. Because, you know, Scar has like the wavy good that goes like this.
True. You
know, so when he turned bad, he got his hair
like absolutely.
So we'll start with our first question. What's your favorite musical?
Oh man, my favorite musical. I mean, that's seasonal too. The first thing that came to my head was Rent. Yeah, I did Rent in college. It was one of the first musicals I fell in love with in high school. The music always hits hard for me. You know, I always have an emotional connection to the Angel storyline. I love Rent. And it's just, I mean, it's so New York. It makes me feel like super free. Anytime I feel like uninhibited, I think of, you know, the time when I was in high school, just like crazy musical theater kid singing Rent. Like that was a powerful time for me.
Mm-hmm.
Who did you play in college?
I was in the ensemble.
Yes.
Yeah, it was my sophomore year. And no, it was freshman year because that was the whole thing. Freshmen usually don't get cast, but so me and my friend Blaine, and Matt Hill, we were the only freshmen to be cast in Rent, and we had the time of our lives. It was so much fun.
Cool, you're a star.
I saw some, you know, in the ensemble for sure.
Where did you go to school?
Cincinnati College Conservatory of Music.
Oh, nice. Cool.
So you know all about La Rosa's Pizza and Skyline Chili.
Oh, yeah.
And Grater's Ice Cream.
Well, I'm actually from Cincinnati. I grew up about 20 minutes away from campus in a cute little neighborhood called Northside. I don't know if you clearly know about Cincinnati. So
are you east side or west side?
Northside is, I guess it's more west. But, I mean, it's like right next to Clifton and... It's pretty central. It's like it's the heart of Cincinnati.
My parents were born and raised in Cincinnati. Mm-hmm. And they always joke about how like my dad's from the west side, but my mom's from the east side or something. Mm-hmm. And like it was like so crazy they got together.
That was a thing definitely in your parents' day. I don't know if that's like still a thing now though.
But yeah, when your parents would like open paper maps and be like, this is where the line is.
Right.
Yeah, like they have one of those like an artist that's from like, I think the artist that does like the comic Zits is from mm-hmm. Cincinnati. Mm-hmm. And so like he has this entire like really like big paneled thing all about like East Side versus West Side Cincinnati. And my parents like bought that and got it framed. And it's like in our house, like in the guest room and stuff. Like they're very about Cincinnati and all that kind of stuff.
Like a little West Side Story moment for them.
100%. They always joke about that.
Yeah, that's not a thing. I mean, my partner is also from Cincinnati, but he lives in Batavia, and that's definitely it's like the country of like on the outskirts of Cincinnati, and that's like a big thing. Like the fact that we got together, like we would if it weren't for us going to high school together in the city, which brought everyone from like different socioeconomic backgrounds, you know, to the school, then we would have never met. Cross town lovers.
That's amazing. Did you go straight from graduating college to New York City?
I did, yeah. So we did our little showcase and everyone moved up here that month, like in April. I a week before showcase, I moved here. It was me and my friend Stephanie. We subletted a studio apartment in Harlem, like right across from Harlem Tavern, you know?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And we were so excited. We're like, oh, yeah, we'll make a studio work. And we did. It was great. And I got a job at Lido. Do you guys?
Yeah, I've been to Lido.
Yes. Yeah.
And I got fired like the next week because I was like, actually, I need to take 2 weeks off to go do a play at the Muni. And she was like, don't come back.
Oh, no. What did you do at the Muni?
Yeah, you booked right away.
Yeah, I did the Addams Family.
Oh, cool.
Oh, was the guy, so that was pretty epic. Also in the ensemble, I was a little ghost. It was great.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And then what was your Broadway debut? Was it Beautiful?
Yeah, my Broadway debut was in 2015 or 16. I think I want to say 16. And I was just swinging Beautiful for quite a while. That was sweet. Beautiful.
So what was, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
Oh, no, I just said Beautiful, such a great show. That's all.
It is. So growing up in Cincinnati, I'm assuming you saw a lot of tours that maybe came through, or you grew up on movie musicals. I guess, what was that first thing that kind of like, oh, I want to do this. Like this is what I want to do. Or did that come later after, like, you know, you were more in choir and things like that? And I guess, what was your experience growing up and falling in love with that?
I innately was a performer since I was like six. We used to African dance as a family on Saturday afternoons, and from there a director asked, kind of poached my mom and was like, she should be in theater. And so then I start doing little plays and taking dance class, so it was always something that I did. I think I was in the seventh grade when I wanted to actually pursue it. I went to a performing arts school.
Mm-hmm.
What is the moment though? It just was always a thing. I knew I wanted to be a pop star, actually, to be completely honest. I like begged my mom to relocate us to Orlando so that I could, or LA, so that I could be on Disney. Like, I so wanted to be a Disney pop star. But I think it was the seventh grade that I was like, oh, I like musical theater. I'm connecting to these songs, the storytelling of musical theater. And I went to camps and stayed in school, and I worked at Kings Island, which is an amusement park.
Yeah, yeah.
In Cincinnati. Yeah, it just was, the road was just always kind of clear. I really cannot pinpoint it. But I do, to answer your question, coincidentally enough, my aunt took me to see The Lion King when I was pretty young. And I didn't see a lot of shows, actually. That was the first show that I had seen, and I was pretty old. And I remember just seeing the performers up there and just feeling like I should be there. And I kind of just continued to pursue it.
Cool. Okay, so you're growing up, you're allowed to choose your Mount Rushmore of pop stars you look up to. Who are those four pop stars on your personal growing up Mount Rushmore?
That would be Whitney Houston and Rihanna, Beyonce, Madonna, Prince, Michael Jackson.
Amazing. What was like your go-to song that you would just hum to yourself or sing in the shower or whatever?
Whitney Houston. I was such a Whitney Houston fan growing up.
Sure. Amazing. That's so good. Wait, what, Kimberly, Kevin, what are your like pops, growing up pop star Mount Rushmores?
You're talking to people who listen to cast albums more than pop music, Brian.
Yeah, like if
I'm just like, Heather Headley.
I had to pick, I would say that I listened to all of Linda Eder's like albums that weren't in musical theater. I was super gay, but like, so there's that. But like, Sarah Bareilles, I followed her from like her very first albums.
Childhood?
I mean, that was like early high school when she first like,
I guess that's released, true.
Like, her first EP or whatever. I found it in a Borders bookshop when I challenged myself to go in there and not buy a cast album, but buy like something pop. And like Sarah's out, like first EP was like close by to the cast album. So I bought that. But like, think about like growing up, like, I listened to what my mom put in the car while we were driving, and that was mostly like Journey and Styx and like 80s kind of like rock, pop, like that kind of stuff. So like, that's mostly what I think of like childhood, is that kind of music.
Interesting.
I think of Britney Spears.
Oh, sorry. Oh yeah, right. Wait, Brian, didn't we saw Kimber in Beautiful, right?
I could check. I get the program here. We probably did.
I'm pretty sure we did.
A lot of it's swinging, so it would have been an insert, which I'm sure you don't have.
Oh, if there was an insert that night, I absolutely have it.
Really? You keep the inserts? Oh.
Yeah. Totally.
Do people not keep the inserts?
Brian,
do you
know? Brian has a binder of every single movie theater ticket he's ever bought. That's like true. In order of what he's seen, like in a little binder. Like
it goes back to 1998.
That's hardcore.
Sure, hardcore is one way to describe it. But you know where else?
Describe it other ways.
Yeah. You know where else we get really hardcore?
Where?
Tuesdays in the corner with Kevin.
It's Kevin's Corner.
Welcome to Kevin's Corner, where I get to ask or do whatever I want because it's my corner and I'm excited about it. And so today we're playing Does Any of This Make Sense to You? And basically what that means is I am going to tell you like a group or a crew or like a band. And I want you to pick like which member of that group you feel like you identify with. And if it's something that's like too old for you to like have been like to know about, you can just say, I don't understand, and we'll move on. Get the game? Mm-hmm. Great. So the first one is Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Which Ninja Turtle would you be?
I don't know those kids. I think I would be the rat, though.
Splinter. I love it. Brian, who would you be?
Probably Donatello. I wanted to be Donatello as a kid. That's the one I always chose. I think I am. Like if Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles were like our Hogwarts houses, I definitely would have been Donatello, because I feel like Donatello is the Ravenclaw. Michelangelo is the Hufflepuff. Uh-huh. Raphael is the Slytherin and Leonardo is the Gryffindor.
Yeah, Raphael 100%.
Oh, really? I don't understand.
And I would have been Michelangelo. Okay, so next one for you, Kimber. I'm trying to get the Smurfs.
I don't know those kids either.
Oh, because I was thinking to myself, there was a ride at the theme park in Cincinnati.
The Smurf ride? No, I'm like old school Cincinnati when it was like all Nickelodeon themed.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it was a Smurfs ride for a hot second. Okay. Backstreet Boys. Which Backstreet Boy do you identify with?
Which Backstreet Boy? I want to say Nick Lachey, but he's not a Backstreet Boy, is he?
No, he is. Oh, wait, no, that's, I'm thinking of Nick Carter.
Yeah, Nick Lachey is 98 Degrees.
Oh, yeah. It's Carter I'm thinking of. Yeah.
Okay, we'll go to Carter. 100%. Spice Girls.
I mean, I feel like casting, I would have to say Scary, but like if I'm truly just tapping into my desires, I would want to be Posh. I feel way more connected to Posh.
Okay. Destiny's Child.
Kelly. Absolutely Kelly all the way. Kelly since
day. Yeah.
She has some really good songs.
She is fine too. Like she is my goal body. Like every time I see her, I'm just like, yeah, that is where I want to get to in my life. And she's always just had a really great body, great sense of style. She looks good in everything. When they had those gaudy outfits in the 90s, hers was always the best. Like it could have been anything. Kelly was rocking it. And she's the second lead singer in the group, underrated, you know, all this time. Now she's getting her flowers. I love Kelly. I've always been a Kelly fan.
Amen. Rugrats.
I feel like I'm Cynthia, the doll. Just recently, I wear my natural hair in the show. I start off with braids in the show, like five little braids and like five little parts, and then second act, Charisse, my hair lady, she takes them out, but she leaves the parts in because I have to put the braids back in. Like it's a quick change. But after the production number, when I'm like shaking my head, the hair kind of comes undone, and I swear I look like the Cynthia doll, where it's like part here, part here,
And I'm say it, and then I just see myself, and I kind of like try to hide it, but now I'm just rocking with it because I love Cynthia, and I love the Rugrats movie when she sings One Way or Another, and she's looking for her.
Yes,
love that doll.
Oh,
that's God, so I love the Rugrats movie.
If I said The Little Mermaid, but you're not allowed to pick Ariel.
I'm also choking on the wine. But I'm thinking as well. That's hard.
Yeah, it sounds like you're like crying about it. You're choking.
I'm going to be Ariel. No, actually, Ariel is my least favorite Disney princess. So I'm not even mad about that.
Why?
Because, y'all, she is selfish. She's so selfish. She just wants to, like, the father warns her, this is not good for us, this is not good for the community. And she does it anyway. She goes, she trades her soul, and, or her voice, and she, like, brings so much trauma and, you know, and danger to the rest of the community just because she wants to be where the people are. Doesn't make any sense. She's selfish, and she's flighty. No, Belle, she's fighting for her father, and she's a smart girl, and she cares about community and people. Ariel only cares about herself.
And amen. No one cares about that.
I'd be the dad. He's wise. He's fine.
He was super fine.
Right? Those dads, like, he kills it. And every time you see him now, he has these, like, gorgeous locks. I feel like every time I see a rendition of Ariel, the dad is just, he has these, like, you know, beautiful locks of hair. So I'd be.
Yeah.
Amazing. All right. Well, this has been Kevin's Corner. Well done. Brian, okay. Did you find it?
Yeah, I found it. So let's see.
It's like a one-man show watching you go through all your playbills back there.
I need to organize them better. Okay, so I do have an insert in here. So let's see. Drum roll, please. At this performance, the role of Barry Mann will be played by Daniel Torres.
Oh, so we didn't see you.
So no.
But you are in my program.
Sweet.
And we're going to read your bio.
Yes.
And the bio says, let's find you. The bio says, here you are. Kimber Sprawl, Swing. Broadway debut, exclamation point. Regional, Walnut Street Theater and Riverside Theater, Felicia in Memphis. Did you play it two separate times in those cities, or is...
It was a co-production.
Cool. The Carnegie, Velma in Chicago, the Muni, the Addams Family, Sacramento Music Circus, Hair, Music Theater, Wichita, Pilar in Legally Blonde, Love to My Beautiful Mother, CCM, and The Roster. This is for you, Granny! Exclamation point. That's so nice.
The Roster is your agency?
They were for a time, yeah.
Nice.
They were.
Sweet, yeah.
Amazing. I think
the roster was like a cool thing you called like your friends, like, and the roster.
That's what I thought too, like CCM and the roster.
No, we call each other the harmonics, actually.
Really?
Oh, okay.
We do, and they're probably going to crack up that I'm telling you that. But yeah, we formed an alliance in college, and we used to go on, you know, just crazy trips together. And the six of us, we just traveled so well. I don't know where harmonics came from, but anytime the roll call is, everybody like puts their note in. And if that goes down, then you know it's going to be a crazy night.
That's incredible.
Someone carry a pitch pipe to make sure you're all ready.
Oh, always.
That's so cool.
So let's talk a little bit about The Girl from the North Country. Tell us about the process coming back from all of this.
It was a very strange process just because it was so surreal that after a year and a half, we were
there in the same room together again. But we have such an extraordinary group of people, a loving team, an extraordinary team, that the process itself was pretty smooth. I mean, we came in, I think we rehearsed for like 3 weeks. We were pretty lucky because we did previews, we rehearsed, we did previews, and then we opened a week later, we closed. But we already had good bones, you know?
Sure, yeah.
But mostly I just felt super grateful, you know? You imagine the time, what it's going to be like when you go. I know that I had a lot of anxiety because, you know, I didn't know what it was going to be like. I didn't know what the world was going to be like. Mm-hmm. But like I said, we just have such a great support system that it ended up being pretty great. I think the hardest thing for me, not trying to call out the flaws, but only because like it was as seamless as it could have been. Like it was just such a
totally
experience. But you forget how much energy you constantly have to put out just being in an ensemble of people and interacting with everyone who works in the building, everyone who works behind the stage, and even getting to work. Like you're performing. So energy is constantly going out. And so for the first couple of weeks, I was just exhausted from that. Like it wasn't even the show itself. It's just like, we all were in our little COVID bubbles for so long. Like I interacted mm-hmm. with 5 people, and then all of a sudden it was like, you know, 200% again. And that took a lot. And it still is a huge adjustment. Like, I feel like I do one activity and I'm exhausted. Like I talk to 2 people and I'm exhausted.
It's that social stamina.
Yeah.
How long did it go down?
Yeah, big time.
Yeah.
How long did it take for you to kind of like get that 8 shows a week kind of stamina back, like, and feeling comfortable with it? Are you still in that process?
I'm still in the process, and we're only doing 7 shows right now. We start our 8 show week, I think, in 2 more weeks. So I have Monday off, which is amazing.
Oh, that's incredible.
Phenomenal. We should just only do that forever. Mentally and emotionally, it is a very hard show to manage and gear up to every single night. And I'm giving myself grace. In my mind, I feel like I need to be doing 1,000 things. I need to be going to the gym, and I need to be having voice lessons and taking all these auditions and stuff, because that's what we are used to doing, or at least I was used to doing before the pandemic. But I'm just giving myself a lot of grace. It's just chill. Like, I didn't do anything today. I watched a lot of like Big Mouth and I had a great time. Usually if I'm off, I'm like, okay, how many things can I get done in one day?
Yeah, sure.
And that just leaves me room so that when I am on stage and I am in that theater with those people, I'm able to give my heart and soul to the show, because that's what it deserves. Like, it's such a beautiful piece of art and theater that I want to be able to preserve everything for our little town in Duluth.
I love that.
That's awesome.
How familiar were you with Bob Dylan's music before this show?
I wasn't actually very familiar at all. And I'm embarrassed about it, but it's the tea, it's the truth. I knew Make You Feel My Love because Adele sang it. I knew Blowing in the Wind because I love Forrest Gump and Jenny singing. But I didn't know. I knew the man, the legend, but I wasn't familiar or intimate with his work at all. And now I just feel so lucky to know him personally and know all his history. Bob Dylan is an insanely prophetic genius, and I'm just happy that I get to sing his music and learn so much about him every day now. And I'm still learning. Like, I just came across a woman, Joan Baez, is that her name? A folk singer?
Yeah, Joan Baez, yeah.
And Odetta, who's another like really cool folk singer, and I just kind of like dug in, and then it turns out like they were best friends with Bob Dylan. They toured together, they wrote music together. I'm constantly just finding him in places that I never knew existed, because he truly is just, you know, everyone wanted a piece of him, and he gave so much to our community.
So
and jumping off of that, in terms of giving, like, what do you want people to take away after seeing the show? Whether it's the message that you were trying to get through from before, when you were open for a week, or is it different because of the 18 months? Like, what are you now trying? Do you hope people walk out of that theater with?
Many things. The first thing that pops in my head, I was just talking to a friend about it. I think this show sets a new precedent for what musical theater can be. I think, especially on Broadway and commercially, we think it has to be super big and showy, and it has to be wrapped up in the bow and gives you everything. I want to be able to show the audience and teach the audience that musical theater can be an experience that it is made for you to think. And this show, you don't get everything at once. It is meant for the audience to just have their own kind of perspective and opinion. Like, you can literally watch the show next to your friend and y'all can take away a completely different concept. And that is okay. You know, I feel like people are like often frustrated, where it's like, well, what is it? Was she pregnant or was she not? And it's like, well, how did you feel? Like, what did you think? So I want that to be like, I just want people to come with an open mind about that. Furthermore, I just want people to know Bob Dylan and see how universal his music is, even if you're not a Bob Dylan fan. I was not. And I feel like I learned so many lessons about love and family and not religion, but spirituality. You know, it's such a strong spiritual piece that I feel like I didn't even know that I needed, but it truly helped me through the pandemic. The show is based in 1937, Duluth, Minnesota, during the Great Depression. And it was so hard for me to even imagine what it was like to survive something like the Great Depression. And it wasn't until we experienced the pandemic that I realized, oh, as human beings, you're continuously finding ways to evolve and survive. And while you're trying to survive and cope with your basic like needs, you also want to be loved and you want to be understood and you want to make connections. And I think that is like a powerful thing about the Great Depression that isn't really talked about in the history books, and now we know that we've all experienced it, and human beings continue to experience things like that and evolve and survive. That makes sense.
Yeah, it absolutely makes sense.
That's so true, because I feel like we've all like gone through the pandemic for so long now that we forget that like this is like a history moment in time, like the Great Depression was, and like you don't often live through those things. Here we are. Yeah.
And boy, oh boy, have we lived through a lot of those things.
And in 50 years, there'll be a jukebox musical about Zooms.
Yeah. Zoomsicle. Yeah.
Zoomsicle?
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah, I watch Zoomsicle from my computer. Do you have any favorite movie musicals that are just like, these are my movie musicals? What's your Mount Rushmore? This is my new thing. What's your Mount Rushmore of movie musicals? Like, what are the ones you, what are your like remote droppers? Like, you watch it, like it's on TV, remote goes down.
Remote drop. That's intense. First thing I thought of was Chicago, man. I think that's one of the best movie musicals out there. I personally love it better than the Broadway production. And I never say that.
Yeah, yeah.
That did better for me on the screen than it does on Broadway.
Sure.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And the Broadway production is incredible. It's just that story, the way that the medium like told that story was just such a fascinating take that it was just like, this is what they were going for. Like,
yeah. I dare say that Chicago needs to be revived on Broadway and it needs to be more like the movie. Like, I want...
Interesting.
I love the black and, you know, and everything kind of like scaled down. But for those production numbers, you know, I want to see the color. I want to see the glitz and the glamour. Like,
mm-hmm.
I love Chicago for that.
Oh, yeah. If I could go back in time, I would see the original production of Chicago, because I think it was a lot more, like, colorful and more like the movie in the 70s.
Yeah, I would love to see that, too.
Well, I have a time machine here. Let's go. Don't roll your eyes, Kevin. You wish I had a time machine.
I do so bad.
Chicago's a great one.
Yeah, I know, right? No, we can only see Chicago.
That's the only thing my time machine does.
It does. It takes us to 1975. You can't even see a chorus line. You can only see Chicago.
Yeah, being able to move through time is one of my superhero dreams. Like, if I had to pick a power, time would be one of them. I just want to know the truth. I want to know all the scandals. I want to know what went down. I want to know myself.
So you have the ability. This is your superpower. Now let's figure it out. Can you could travel to any point in time? Are there limitations to your power? Can you only travel back to points in time that you've been in and redo those?
No, there are no limits at all, but I want to travel back to specific moments in history where there's like a lot of discrepancies history is only written and made and preserved by the people in power. And so I want the tea. Like, I want to go back. Like, did Anne Boleyn cheat on Henry VIII? We'll never know. I want to go back. I want to find out if she did. Mm. She claims that she didn't, and she still got her head chopped off. I want to know the tea.
Okay, need more rules.
Solving murders.
What a wild cold case TV show. So here's my question for you. I need another rule in there. Can you change history, or are you only quietly observing it?
Oh, well, because I love control, yes, I would say that I could change it.
All right.
But cool. I'm egalitarian, and I would say, no, that's not fair. I just want to go back and give it to you. It'd be so, but that would be the conflict in the movie, right? Like, she wants to change it, but she can't.
Would you come back and like share the truth and like set the history books right? Or would you like keep all of this to yourself?
No, and started podcast.
I think I would need to set the record straight. I would rewrite the history books.
Yeah. So, it's a podcast. You go back and interview all of these people. And then release it now.
So the first piece of tea is that, like, what other pieces of tea intrigue you greatly?
Okay, that's a big one. Let me see what else. I mean, I just watched Hamilton for the seventh time, and I want to be there. I heard that like John Lawrence and Hamilton were like a thing. So I would love to go back and get that tea.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
What else?
Are we talking about like Amelia Earhart, what happened, like all that kind of stuff, or just like.
You can go anywhere.
Yeah. Just anything that intrigues you. You watch a movie, a history movie, and you're like, wow, I really would love to know what actually happened.
Sure.
So yeah.
I've got one. I would go back to see if FDR knew that the Japanese were going to attack Pearl Harbor. If he let it happen to join the war to save the economy, or if it was really a surprise. That's what I would want to know.
Yeah.
Is that a rumor?
That's a rumor?
Yeah.
Kevin and I just found out there's a rumor that JFK had a lover, like male lover.
Yeah, we just found that out.
Did. Most people probably did.
They called him the first friend.
And he had his own room.
In the White House, and he went on trips with him, and like everywhere they're at, like they're taking like the gay thirst trap pictures like on boardwalks and stuff. And I'm like, girl, I know those boys. Like, I'm friends with those boys. I know what this is.
I also would love to go back, and this is like horrible, but I would love to go back, and I can't imagine slaves escaping and fleeing to the north. Like, I want to go on that journey. Like, what was that like?
Ooh.
You know? Oh, my God.
I can't even imagine.
I would love to.
Yeah.
And we also have Sorry, Kevin, go.
I was just saying, like, the adrenaline, the terror, the, like, just like mm-hmm. all of that, just like constantly going for like weeks as and like date, like as like I.
How did they know where they were going? They did not have maps or cell phones. Like
they followed that star, they followed the drinking gourd.
Yep.
I always try to find the drinking gourd at night. I can never find it. I would have been toast.
Totally, but at least there wasn't as much smog. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Bring the same joke.
Like I get out of the subway and it tells you what is like you're getting out of the northeast side, and I'm like, okay, I still turned the wrong way the first time.
Yeah, yeah.
I would have been totally screwed.
Emma, oh my god, yeah.
That's incredible.
That's a good one. Well, on that note, should we play a game?
Okay. Yes, please.
Sure. Not time related at all. in fact, when this episode airs, it will be after Thanksgiving, which means it is finally time to pull up my list of the upcoming Hallmark Christmas movies.
Ooh. Oh, this, I forgot about this game. I'm very excited.
So what I have is on one tab of my phone is a list of upcoming Christmas movies. The fun fact about the list this year is there are no synopses available.
Oh.
So I couldn't play my normal game of did I make this movie up?
Yes.
So instead, I have on another tab just some pop Christmas hits. And so when it's your turn, you will receive a pop music hit for Christmas and a Hallmark movie title.
Mm-hmm.
And then I would like for you to make me a movie musical with that title and that Christmas song being the title track. Not, well, not the title track. The
featured like,
crux
song.
Of yeah. the film. The featured yeah, yeah. song. Brian, would you like to go first?
Happily.
Wonderful. Say when for a movie title.
When for a movie title.
Well done.
Ooh, went all the way to the bottom. There we go. You got Debbie McComber's A Mrs. Miracle Christmas.
Debbie McComber's a what? What?
A Mrs. Miracle Christmas. I would assume this is some sort of series, Mrs. Miracle.
Okay, I'm gonna go with A Mrs. Miracle Christmas.
Great, and now say when for a pop song.
Say when for a pop song.
Have yourself a Merry Little Christmas.
Okay.
It's a pop song.
Judy Garland version. Go.
Oh, okay. This one says Sam Smith's version. That's why it's on this list.
All right. So, what was her name? Debbie Fowler?
McComber.
Debbie McComber.
McComber? I have no idea.
Okay. Debbie McComber, Mrs. Miracle Xmas. So, Debbie McComber is a woman who lives in the Midwest, and she is single during Christmas. And she really wants she has to go home for Christmas, and she's always the lonely one, her brothers, her sisters. And she's very happy with how she is. She, in terms of like, she has an awesome career. She just like around the holidays, she gets a little lonely. She doesn't have anyone to share it with. Okay. So on her way home, she gets into a fender bender, with someone in front of them who we never really learned this person's name. Spoiler alert, it's Mrs. Miracle. And so she gets into a little fender bender and her car and Debbie's car doesn't work. And there's something weird about it because like, it was just a bump and like all of a sudden her engine doesn't work. That's a wild thing. So then they get into her car and it becomes this road trip thing home. On the radio, Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas. The radio is broken in Debbie's car. And that's the song that just keeps playing on loop. And it is symbolic of Debbie's frustrations in the car with Mrs. Miracle. So like at one point they're both singing along and enjoying it and talking about their lives. And then like, they just like, you know, at one point they just get so frustrated because like they're over the song, like turn it off. They can't turn it off. And she's just like, she gets frustrated about her life. And then she finally gets home and through conversation and whatnot, she goes home and she realizes that like life is good. She doesn't need somebody right now. It'll happen in time, whatever the case may be. And then at the end, she like goes to a bar with her friends and Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas is playing on the jukebox. And then she gets into a conversation with somebody at the bar, and we see Debbie outside with like a twinkle in her eye. And like, I don't know, she's Mrs. Claus or something wild like that at the end. And so this is Debbie McCabe's A Mrs. Miracle Xmas, featuring Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas.
Well done.
Wonderful. I took the pleasure of Googling Debbie McComber while you were doing that. She's a romance novelist, and this is an adaptation of her novel starring Caroline Ray of Sabrina the Teenage Witch fame.
Yes.
I do love.
As Mrs. Miracle.
Great.
Love. I met her in a Home Goods line once.
I will keep that casting as her as Mrs. Miracle in mind.
Great.
Oh, absolutely.
And I think that Debbie in this, so this is how Debbie gets the idea for writing A Mrs. Miracle Xmas. Yeah, and I'm going to cast Debbie as Audra McDonald, because she's going to have to sing a version of Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas for the soundtrack and for the end credits. Or maybe it's a karaoke bar at the end and she decides to sing Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas and then somebody else comes up to join her. I like that better.
Okay.
Great.
Kevin, are you ready for a turn?
I'm ready.
They win.
When?
Open by Christmas.
Got it.
They win.
When?
All I want for Christmas is you.
Great. Okay. So this is a musical about, it's a Hallmark musical, so we're going to go and make this cheesy. All right. So it is about a wife who is home in the United States for the holidays whilst her, you know what, we're going to make we're going to make Hallmark progressive while her lesbian partner is away fighting in a war. So she is like somewhere overseas warring it. And so the wife is home, the holidays by herself, and so the wife that is in the service person in the army, she has sent all of these envelopes, but they're not being like delivered to the house. They're like throughout her wife's day, she's being delivered these envelopes, and they're all like, she keeps opening them and they're kind of like building almost like a scavenger hunt style thing because she can't be there with her for Christmas. So she's giving her this like fun adventure of like randomly finding these envelopes and they're all clues that are leading her to different places to find another envelope. And it keeps going and she doesn't know what it's leading to. And then at the end, the last clue takes her to the airport. And when she gets to the airport, her partner is getting off a flight because she's come home for the holidays. And it's like this like, yay, we're together kind of thing. And just in the airport, when they like when she gets there and sees her walking down like the tarmac, All I Want for Christmas Is You is playing, and it's actually Mariah Carey like singing it live in the movie.
Obviously,
that's her set at like you know at JFK.
100%. So it's just like her set up at like a grand piano, actually singing it, and then they get together. So that's Open, wait till, what is it? Open in Christmas?
Open by Christmas.
Open by Christmas with All I Want for Christmas Is You. Boom.
And I did just Google the synopsis real quick of the actual film, which you're not far off. When Nikki finds an unopened Christmas card, and then from there, from an old secret admirer, she and her best friend embark on a quest to find the anonymous author.
Oh, cute. I like that. That's like Letters to Juliet.
Yeah.
You say Romeo and Juliet? Just like it.
I love Romeo and Juliet.
No, Brian. We have one episode where you don't talk about Romeo and Juliet. All right, Kimberly.
Would you like a turn?
Okay, yeah, let's do it.
Okay, say when.
When?
Coyote Creek Christmas.
Coyote?
Coyote Creek Christmas. Okay. and say when for a song.
When?
Oh, It's Beginning to Look a Lot Like Christmas by Michael Bublé.
All right. Well, we start in November, and this couple decides that they want to go on a hike together. It's late. No, it's actually December. I'm lying. But it's not like close to Christmas yet. And they're going to go on this hike. They hike through. They go to upstate. What's the place in upstate?
Ithaca?
Mohonk.
Oh, yeah.
Lake Mohonk is beautiful.
It is very beautiful. And it's all... What's my song again? Sorry, I Want It for Christmas Too. Yeah.
It's Beginning to Look a Lot Like Christmas.
It's Beginning to Look Like Christmas. Okay, you're right. Yeah. And so they go on this hike, and they get into this like massive fight, and they end up going their separate ways. Back at the cabin, they both decide to write this note to each other, to basically like lay everything out. It's like, it's Christmas time. They've been going through issues. They feel like they should still be together because, you know, that's what their families want from them, but they don't actually know if they're compatible. So basically the guy, he's like, you know what? I'm going to be at the top of this mountain. And if you can make it there, then I know that you want to be with me forever. If you don't, I'm just going to assume that, you know, you don't want to be with me, and it's fine. So she doesn't know if she's going to go. At the last minute, she decides to go. They both get caught in a storm, and she gets eaten by a coyote, and he waits there, and it starts to look like Christmas. The snow is falling. It's like the most beautiful night. And he knows, because they love Christmas, that like she'll be there. It's Beginning to Look a Lot Like Christmas starts to play, and he ends up dying there because he waits for her the whole time, because he knows that she'll show.
Ooh. Like a fable.
I do a lot of readings for this, but I don't. It has good bones.
Really good bones. And I'm obsessed with the way you kind of buried the lead, where you're like, and then she got eaten by a coyote. And then and I was like, whoa, wait, what?
The coyote has a song.
This is like Sleepless in Seattle, but like a horror film.
Yeah. Yeah, we're gonna have to work it, but I do.
No, it's good. I was here for it.
Oh no, I'm going to watch this and make it be my favorite film.
Oh yeah.
Kimberly,
I of course googled the synopsis of Coyote Creek Christmas that will appear on the Hallmark Channel. While throwing a Christmas around the world party at her family's inn, an event planner discovers Christmas magic with a charming father-son duo.
What?
What?
Better, actually.
Yeah. No, if I had the option, I'd be tuning into yours. No question.
Absolutely.
I don't want some vet planner girl to find magic with a father and his son. What are you doing?
What does that mean? With a father-son duo?
What are you doing over there, Hallmark?
Are they magicians? Like, what's happening?
Right. Like, what are they doing? Are they do they build furniture? Like, is it like a thing that they've taught each other? Like,
Coyote Creek Furniture Building.
Yeah. I'm all about it.
All right, Kimberly.
All right, Kevin, say one for me.
When?
Next stop, Christmas.
That's such a good one.
Okay, say one.
When?
Christmas Makes Me Cry by Kacey Musgraves.
Oh, okay. Little Country.
I actually don't know if I know that song, but... The title says it all, yeah, so it'll be fine. Next Stop Christmas happens on an overnight train trip across the country, in which like a jaded LA journalist just wants to see the snow, and so pitches a story about taking a like cross-country train trip in like a fancy sleeper car. To go see his family in New York, where it will be snowy for Christmas. And on the trip, because it's prompted by a very bad breakup, of course, just a sudden desire to spend a week on a train.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the train makes a lot of stops in all of these small towns. And in every small town, there's like an old wise couple that gives love advice, like over a cup of coffee. And then they like sing a song. And then he gets back on the train and the train breaks down and then it snows. And then just a lot of like sitting at the train cabin window as the snow is coming down crying because Christmas makes them cry.
This sounds like sad Stephen Sondheim company on a train.
Yeah. Oh, and there's also like, there's a big scene in the cafe car where like all of the travelers are talking about why they're going home for Christmas or like why they're not staying where they are for Christmas.
How did this Christmas game get so sad so quickly?
I'll make mine happy at the end. And then at the end, turns out in the cabin next to him all along was like his high school flame and they reconnect.
Yay!
And they fall in love and that's the end. And the like conductor is the narrator the whole time.
Moral of the story, I like that. If you're depressed, go back to another ex. Yay!
Yay!
That happens.
It happens.
Here and there.
Definitely happens.
All right, so, that was this year's Hallmark movie roundup.
Yes.
So before we end here, while we're talking about holidays, do you have holiday traditions that you do every year with family or friends or whatever the case may be?
I honestly don't. I do love skiing. I have to make sure I ski at least twice. We go up to Tremblant in Connecticut. That's kind of become like my tradition.
Sure. As
a single adult in New York City. My partner's family, they have a bunch of traditions. White elephant is like a big thing they like to play for Christmas.
Sure.
We honestly like didn't even celebrate that growing up for me. So we just kind of wing it. You know?
Cool. I love that.
All right.
And now on the total opposite end of the spectrum, we're going to do stage door stories.
Oh, yeah.
Do you have any stage door stories from your experience, just like heartwarming or funny or not so funny or whatever kind of what pops to your head when I say stage door to you, whether it's you stage dooring or someone stage dooring, you know, at the beautiful door or whatever the case may be.
I don't have many cool ones to be completely honest, but there was this woman who like came to the stage door once and I like randomly told her, I don't know how we got on the subject of like Coca-Cola. She loves Coke, but she loves Diet Coke. And I was like, no, absolutely not. Like I cannot drink it. If I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it big. And for the next year, she would send me Coke. And that was just so sweet.
That's an incredible story.
Wow. Oh, is that? Okay.
That's so nice.
Yeah,
I don't have any like crazy things.
She sent you like Coca-Cola.
Yes, Coca-Cola. She sent me a bottle. She sent me cans as well. Like she would send me, you know, because I have a thing. There's this ongoing thing. I would like to get your opinion, but what's better in a bottle and a can? What do you? Coke in a bottle. You're a bottle?
I don't drink soda, but I would assume it's a bottle.
Mm. No,
can is the correct answer.
Can
is the absolute correct answer.
But yeah. But can or fountain?
No, fountain is the absolute worst. Oh. Never get a fountain.
Wow. So that seems controversial.
I agree because the fountain gets water. It's watered down and flat. You got to go with the can.
Yeah, the ratio.
When the can is cold and you get that first crack and you can't beat it.
Mm-hmm. It like with the for me, fountains, the ratio between the sugar and the carbonation is always off. Except if you go to Chipotle. Chipotle and McDonald's, they're the best fountain drinks.
McDonald's is the best Diet Coke in the world.
Yeah, and that's only because Chipotle used to be owned by McDonald's. So they have
Are they not anymore?
I don't think so. I think Chipotle is its own entity now.
You were dropping the tea.
Well, she went back she in went time back to in find time. That out.
I found out. I got the tea for you.
Oh, wait. I looked up the real synopsis of the movie I did, whatever it was called, Next Stop Christmas. It's about time travel.
Oh, really?
She finds herself magically transported into the past, and Angie has a chance to relive the Christmas and learn what's truly important to her.
Oh, that's so sweet of the good for Angie.
Oh, Angie.
Well, on that note, that brings us to the end of our episode. Kimber, thank you so much for joining us. Everyone go see Girl from the North Country. Where can they find you on social media?
My Instagram is Kimber Elaine Sprawl.
Cool.
Yeah, yeah.
You can find that in our description of this episode. Thank you so much for joining us. You can find us on social media at Twitter, Instagram, at BroadWasted. You can find us on our Facebook group. Join that. We do some theater nerdy stuff. Join our Patreon, where we're doing a lot of awesome, cool stuff. Some behind-the-scenes stuff for our radio musical this year. So you're definitely going to want to check that out. And then in addition to all of that, of course, this is a podcast. So find us wherever you get your podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts. Rate and review us there. 5 stars, please.
And thank you.
Yeah, for the holidays, rate and review us. That would be your gift to us. We'd really appreciate that. The more reviews and ratings that we get, the more people find us, and the longer we can do this with people finding us and expanding what we've done here. So we really appreciate you doing that. But on that note, we always end with a quote, and that quote is, idiot wind, blowing every time you move your mouth, blowing down the back roads heading south, idiot wind, blowing every time you move your teeth. Again, see Girl from the North Country. You can get tickets for that. We highly suggest you see it. Thank you so much for joining us. And, you know, we know you're busy and you're working on that social stamina. So thank you for giving some of it to us. We appreciate it.
Thanks. Have y'all seen the show yet?
No, I haven't.
Okay.
Wait, you saw it?
Kevin, did you?
Yes.
But you saw it
two years ago, right?
I saw it like pre-pandemic.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you gotta come back.
I saw it early preview, so I need to come back.
We'll be back.
We'll be back. But we end every episode, we raise a glass. And yeah, we'll be back for the first time.
Yeah.
We raise a glass and we say, Zuduwa. Cheers, everyone. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RISETHEATRE.org, because only together we rise.